Good evening. This was to be a celebration of the anniversary of the founding of this congregation. But then, just 3 days ago, on Monday morning, our Director of Administration and Finance, Christina Rivera, was doing her job, going through the mail that had accumulated over the weekend. Along with the bills and the solicitations, there was a plain piece of paper which said, "Quit your whining. It's always about racism with you. You have a job to do, do it. We went into debt for your full time, and now you complain? Your kids must be so proud. At least they are just half and maybe learning from their dad. You should be thankful and get to working." Someone had thought those thoughts about a member of our staff, a fellow Unitarian Universalist, another human being. And that person apparently thought that it was okay to type those thoughts up, print them out, and place them anonymously into the mailbox on Chris's door. It seems virtually certain that whoever did this is a member of the congregation, and it appears likely that they committed this undeniably and inexcusably racist act on Sunday. So with the knowledge of this hateful incident swirling around us, this doesn't seem like the time to be celebrating. Yet our history is not irrelevant to what's happening now. 75 years ago today, 15 women and men declared that they wanted to be, that they were, a church. The woman who started it all by placing a classified ad in the Daily Progress had been told that it was unlikely that a town as small as Charlottesville was then would be able to create and nurture a Unitarian congregation. She was, in fact, discouraged from trying. Yet, as she said in a letter to a friend at the time, "I am not easily discouraged, and we can see what we can do." Carrie Baker was not easily discouraged. And throughout the 75 years of our existence, this congregation has shown time and time again that we are not easily discouraged either. It hasn't always been smooth sailing through those decades. There have been times when events in the wider world or right here in the congregation have caused real uneasiness and pain and distress. Times when the ordained minister or the lay leadership were taking the congregation in a direction that not everybody wanted to go. Times when support, financial and otherwise, dropped off precipitously. Times when even beloved members felt the need to break off their connections to this place and these people. Times when we have disappointed one another, hurt one another, damaged one another, and it seemed that the fabric of the community was being damaged too, and perhaps damaged beyond repair. Yet looking back over the history of this congregation, it is clear that while we have no doubt been discouraged more than a few times, we have yet to be so discouraged that we gave up on one another. Adam Slate, our board president, likes to say that he looks at our church as a family. What we witnessed this week is not how families, healthy families, behave. It's not who we say we are or who we want to be. Now, each Sunday morning, we say with one another words of welcome that are intended to describe the kind of community we are and wish to be. A community that, as I often say, welcomes all who would see this be a world where all are welcome. So I'd invite us now to say those words together. They're in the order of service. whoever you are, whomever you love, however you express your identity, whatever your situation in life, whatever your experience of the holy, your presence here is a gift. Whether you're filled with sadness, overflowing with joy, needing to be alone with yourself, or eager to engage with others, you have a place here. We all have a place here. We all are welcome here.
Good evening. To the author of the anonymous note, I have a message. I stand with Chris Rivera. It's always about racism with me too. I invite you to read with me the words that accompany the lighting of the chalice, which are printed in your order of service. We kindle a flame of power, illuminating the holy in each of our faces. We recognize in the flame a passionate commitment to our shared faith. We are held and carried from day to day, in the shining of the light. This flame is mine as well as yours. We are brought together on this day, called to growth, to expansion within its glow. What does your heart know while holding this holy fire?
I invite you to think about that question as James plays our prelude, to think about what your heart knows while you behold this holy fire here tonight.
In the first sermon delivered here in the then new, brand new building, the Reverend Malcolm Sutherland said this: "You are invited to draw your attention to the fact that in all its simplicity and its beauty, this building is not a church. It was designed to serve a church. It was designed to make more effective a church. It was designed to inspire a church. But it is not a church. You are the church." So we are not opening a church this morning, he said. We are opening a home for our church. This physical home is fully worthy of our highest aspirations. The question is simply, can we prove ourselves worthy of our new home? If it is to be a beautiful church, as beautiful as its home, it will be because you are living beautiful lives. And how we need beauty today. There is ugliness and distortion enough. How we need beauty today. There is ugliness and distortion enough. He said in that first sermon that to be a church worthy of this beautiful home, we would need to be strong, significant, courageous, fearless, and devoted. In his last sermon here, he said that the congregation needed to ask itself, as each of us individually need to ask ourselves, he quickly pointed out, why is it so damned hard to live up to and out from our values? Again and again, he returned in that sermon to the question, why don't we? Why don't we do the things that we know we should do? Why aren't we the kind of people we know we should be? want to be? Why don't we take the kind of risks our faith calls us to? Why don't we really, deeply trust each other more than we do? Why don't we recognize how much we ourselves have to change instead of focusing so much of our attention on the ways other folks are falling short? I'm not even necessarily talking about the big things here, the obvious things, the things we can justifiably say we are doing or that we can honestly say simply aren't possible for us to do. I'm really talking about all of those little ways that we betray ourselves, betray our values, don't do the something that we can. Why don't we do those things? And all of these questions really boil down to the one that Malcolm was implying throughout his sermon. Why don't we live our faith? I don't know how any of you would answer that question, but I know that I am chastened, humbled by it. And I know that it really gets real when I stop myself from asking these questions of that vague we, and instead force myself to ask them only of myself. Why don't I? Because it's easier not to. Why don't I? Because I already feel overstretched and my life can be hard enough as it is. Why don't I? Because I figure someone else is going to do it and it's not really my problem. Why don't I? Because I'm not so bad, right? I mean, look at those people. Why don't I? Because I'm afraid I'll be rejected somehow if I try. Why don't I? Because I'm comfortable the way I am right now, and I know that if I do, I'll be less comfortable. Why don't I? It's a question worth pondering. And the last words of Malcolm's last sermon to this congregation were that question, was that question, why don't we? That's what he left them with. The person who wrote and then delivered that hateful and hate-filled message to Chris has done something reprehensible, and they dragged her kids into it and her lovely husband. What this person did is inexcusable, and I cannot say clearly and forcefully enough that such behavior will not be tolerated, cannot be tolerated if we're who we say we are. The person who sent that message has placed themselves so far beyond the boundaries of our covenant that I can't imagine how they can say the words beloved community and the inherent worth and dignity without bursting into flame because of the blasphemy of their hypocrisy. Yet I need to say with equal clarity and conviction that the rest of us are not without responsibility for what happened either. Each of us, all of us, and I do mean us, myself no less than anybody else, and maybe more so because of my role here, each of us and all of us, we all have to recognize our complicity. Because somehow we have allowed a climate, an atmosphere, an environment to exist in which something like that can happen. A climate in which one of us could believe this violent, racist act was okay. What happened this week is the most egregious example, yet it's not the only example of what we have allowed to grow in our community. I talked several weeks ago at some length in my sermon about how upset some members of the congregation were about my January report to the board. I shared that several people who were upset had reached out and contacted the board and or the committee on the ministry to share their feelings, and well, they should have. It is essential for our community to be what it is that they do. You may not know, however, that someone else created an anonymous email account and then sent an anonymous email seemingly for the express purpose of directing a select group of congregants to check out that report. And then, after sending that email, immediately closed the account. Let me be clear, the anonymous nature of this act is what's not okay. Sharing my board report, encouraging others to read it, expressing their concern, that's fine. But doing so anonymously, having no accountability, taking no responsibility, that is out of covenant. People expressed their dismay over this person's behavior, of course. Yet we really shouldn't be too surprised. We think it unfortunate, yet accept that there are groups of the congregants who get together informally to talk with each other about their concerns and complaints. They do this outside of the committee structure or any leadership structure, which is why these are often called parking lot conversations. And because they do this offline, as it were, there is no accountability to the larger congregation. None of this is secret, yet no one calls them back into covenant. And they are out of covenant because they rarely, if ever, actually try to reach out to the people they're concerned with and complaining about. Please make no mistake. We give this behavior our tacit approval each time one of us says that we really wish this kind of thing wasn't happening. But we engage in it ourselves or see others doing it and do not say directly and forthrightly that such behavior is out of covenant, that it's not constructive, that it's destructive, and has no place in a Unitarian Universalist community. Please hear that I'm not saying any of this to divide us, to make this about some kind of us and them. My goal is instead quite the opposite. I'm saying what I'm saying because I want to help us be more unified, with a clearer and deeper understanding of just what it means and just what it takes to be who we say we are and want to be. That's my job here. That's what you called me here to do. So I'm going to take this a little further, knowing that I'm going to upset some people, knowing that I already have. We show our tacit approval of anonymous notes in people's mailboxes every time we insist that members of the congregation must have the option of giving feedback anonymously on surveys, questionnaires, and communications with the Committee on the Ministry. I've heard the argument that some people are afraid to attach their name to their opinions, that they don't feel comfortable or safe having to sign off on what they need to say. But if that's really the case, then our community has much bigger problems than whatever it is they're complaining about. If we have not created a community in which people know that it's safe to express themselves no matter who they disagree with, a congregation in which we hold one another and want to be held accountable for our behavior, in which we can be clear that there are things that are antithetical to our values and our visions, that not everything is welcome here, then we have created a community in which someone can feel that it's okay to leave an anonymous note that a Klansman would have been proud to have written in the mailbox of one of our staff members. Back in divinity school, I learned that the biblical word that Christians translate into English as sin is actually 7 or 8 words, each with its own meaning. One of those is sitting down when I should have stood up. And I know that I'm guilty of that. And I will say without hesitation or apology that I know that each and every one of you is too. We all are. Can anyone honestly say that they have never let pass a racist joke or some behind-the-scenes gossip or some subtle or not-so-subtle bullying behavior or seen somebody shutting someone else down or any kind of behavior that you knew was not what we'd be doing as a community if we were at our best? If we're really honest with ourselves, how can we not recognize that we all share culpability for what happened, for what we allowed to happen? I am sure that some of you are feeling castigated, attacked, reprimanded, chastised. I understand. Because remember, I've been talking to and about myself this whole time, too. I haven't laid anything on you that I haven't laid on me first. And even as I'm saying this, I'm feeling uneasy and I'm feeling a little defensive. But I have learned that sometimes, maybe even often, the umbrage we feel when someone points out our flaws and failings is an incredibly effective deflection device. I get angry at you for saying harsh things about me rather than taking the opportunity to listen with an open mind and heart, and then to ask myself deeply and sincerely if there might be any truth in what you're saying. That's hard. That's really, really hard. It is so much easier just to write you off. But we can't write this off. Our covenant doesn't call on us to be so kind to one another that people believe, even unconsciously, that they can get away with saying or doing just about anything. Our covenant calls us, as Malcolm Sutherland said that first morning in this space, to be strong, significant, courageous, fearless, and devoted to the values and the visions of our faith. A mirror has been held up for us to look at ourselves. My question is whether we are brave enough to look at what it's showing us.
There is no question, the work of building beloved community is hard. It's dirty. It's bruising. We'll hunger and we'll thirst. Yet it is the work we have committed ourselves to doing. It's the work we have been called on to do. But it is not work we can do in the head alone. And there have been a lot of words tonight. There will still be a few more to come. So why don't we now, as we do each Sunday, take a time for silence, a time for letting go of the words, letting go of the thoughts, and getting down into the feelings. After a time, I will sound the chime, and some of us may feel the urge to come forward to light candles of hope and remembrance or right in the sands of forgiveness and atonement. Others may choose to stay right where you are now, continuing to hold the silence and the stillness in your body as well as your heart. Through all of this, James will play, and when this time is done, we will move directly into singing together the hymn that's also a prayer, number 123, Spirit of Life.